Just a couple of mates catching up on the week.
It's Ben. Plus one.
Hits one.
Sirius XM hits. Were you about to say something?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
I was just doing intake of breath, excited face.
Okay, now that's fine because you were about to go and then I went and I was like, shoot, was he about to say something? It's Sirius XM hits one. It's Ben plus one. Every week I grab somebody and they hang out with me and they co-host for the week. And I am very excited, Ben Barnes, because you are my plus one this morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me. Ben plus Ben.
That's it. It is a double Ben. You are the first, yes, the only other Ben that I've had here. I've held onto the mantle for so long and now I have to share it with you.
That's good to hear.
Stoked to have you here and stoked to hear about this tour that you've just wrapped up. I mean, you do have one more show in LA that you're doing. How has it been going?
It's been so wonderful. It's just like so exciting in your 40s to just do entirely new creative endeavors, and especially ones that are like, you know, when you watch the movie Almost Famous, or you like watch documentaries about bands that you love and seeing them on tour buses and seeing them kind of hype themselves up for these shows and then try and come down for them and then rev it up again the next night and just be in different cities and, you know, walking through weird kitchens below venues, not really knowing where they are.
Yeah.
And to really experience all of these moments, like, they're so thrilling to me because I've been doing movies and TV shows and things for 20 years. And now to be doing something that feels so wildly different is so fulfilling. It's such an amazing adventure. Then we leave to go and do the European leg of the tour in a couple of days.
Yeah, this is exciting. Have you felt that since you've sort of discovered your passion for music and you wanted to touring and doing the and releasing EPs and then releasing the CD, did it almost sort of take a backseat? Like, okay, this is now my time to do music, and then okay, no, an acting project's come in. Like, did it feel a bit like that when you have been trying to like sort things out?
It's a bit of a juggling. It's a bit of a circus act for sure. I think it was something that I had sort of promised myself starting at the beginning of the pandemic. It was something I promised myself I would make time for, because I didn't want to be an old man looking back at my life and wondering why I never tried.
Yeah.
And I think it's actually helped me let go of a lot of like fear of judgment personally and creatively. I think being an actor, you know, you're offering up these movies and these shows which you work so hard of kind of in a secluded environment, and then you offer them up and people either take to them or they love them or they don't. With the music, I think it just felt like I really wanted to share something of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been working on these songs and I've been trying to think of ways to start to gently share them, and realized there was no gently with this. People know who you are from TV and movies over a period of time, and there will be people who are curious, even if it's just like kind of readying their weapons to slam what you're doing or to kind of join you in celebrating it. And then I think the joyful, wonderful, extraordinary thing about music is that it tends to find people who respond to it and who love it. Like, if you listen to a song and you're not into it, you go to something else. You don't buy a ticket to a show of a genre of music that's not your vibe.
Totally.
So I've kind of found some solace in that, and I found some confidence in the fact that this was going to find people who were my people musically, orally.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people who would kind of get the vibe. And I think I have made a bit of time for it. I got a new acting agent last year, and I said, I am going to take these 2 months to go on a world music tour. And they just sort of looked at me entirely befuddled. But actually now they've seen the show and they're sort of,
they get it.
They totally get it. Yeah. And you never know what it might lead to. You never know.
That's right. How have you found, like, from when you started a month ago to now wrapping up in New York, like, how have you found, like, you and the band and how you've been putting the show together? Because I can only imagine that, you know, you want to hit your marks and make sure everything's right and get all the set lists and everything and work on the banter. And then probably by the time you finish things up, you're probably much looser. And it's like, okay, yeah, this
is... It's like you've done it yourself before. That is exactly how it felt. And I think it was a very strange, turbulent start to the tour because it was right as the fires were raging in Los Angeles, and most of the band is from LA. So I think people were very kind of panicked and distracted. And, you know, we only had really after Christmas, like 3 days to put the show together. And I'd obviously been working on it and planning it and practicing it and theorizing about it. But that's not the same thing as actually getting up there with people and doing it. And yeah, living on a bus together, you know, you are an arm's length, sleeping an arm's length from five people you know, there are 10 people on the bus and you can touch most of them.
Yeah.
You build up a rapport and you start playing silly games and you're exhausted together and you're jubilant together and you're celebrating together and you're commiserating together. It builds up a rapport between you, and then that finds its way onto the stage, the way that you kind of connect with each other, and then that finds its way out into the crowd too. And I think I'm preaching about, you know, these songs that feel hopeful and joyful and kind of reflective and all of those things that I hoped people might feel when they listen to these songs. But if you're actually living your life that way, I think that to me is what I find inspiring, is the way someone does something. And I think, you know, even just watching a guy who's done something else for so long try something else later on that he is really passionate about, that's been the real treat of this, is that people have kind of said, oh, well, if you can do that, I can try this.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, I can try, you know, I was teaching somebody came up and said, oh, I'm teaching my students lyrics by looking at one of your songs, or I'm a band leader and we did the baton twirling to one of your songs, or whatever it is. Like, people send me, you know, pole dancing videos and to the songs or whatever it might be. Like,
yes,
there's all these different things that, even if it's just them making sort of like artistic kind of their take on a poster or an album cover or whatever it might be. And
one of the cool things that I saw that you did was that you saw one of the fans, someone that was making like graphic design and was doing posters and that sort of stuff, and you reached out and was like, oh, we actually need someone to make some stuff.
Yeah, like, I kind of made the poster and I was like, it's all right. And I thought it would be cool to have something dynamic, like this person keeps making these, you know, dozens, hundreds of these kind of images that they'd kind of like pulled and worked with in a sort of digital way. And I was like, well, wait, why can't I? So I just got someone to reach out to them, and we hired them to design the tour posters, and we sold them at shows. They're hanging in people's bedroom walls.
Like,
it's
what
cool.
An amazing opportunity, not only for like them to, because they're just doing it in their spare time.
Well, they were doing it anyway, which was
right,
so cool. And I was
it.
Like, well, you should be, I'm so deeply appreciative of that kind of support, and you should be rewarded for it.
And what a great position that you can be in, that you can be like, hey, we need to be doing something that's kind of like how this person's making it. Well, we actually are in a position where we can actually just get them
exactly.
to make it. Like, how
exactly.
cool is that?
That
from
good.
You professionally to be able to do that as well.
Yeah, and I end up with something that I like, which
yes.
is like, it's so often, you know, there are so many elements to doing something like this which I never thought of, you know, like you mentioned, like how to be on a bus, but like, you write the songs, there's also the production side of it, and then there's like, what kind of stage show do you want? The banter in between is that you got to think about how you want to present yourself, you got to think about how you want the band to dress, you got to find engineers, you got to think about, are you going to do covers? If so, what are you going to record them? Are you going to do different versions of things? Are you going to do press stuff, and how do you want that to come across? And are you going to sing live on shows?
Yeah.
So it's like a kind of like a really like overwhelming thing. So to get someone who's like an expert at something to just do it, because you're thinking about posting and making reels and all. When you pour your heart and soul into something, you want it to resonate and you want it to reach the people that it's for,
totally,
whoever they might be. So to have people kind of support you in the ways that they're really good at, in, you know, where you might have a deficit, and I definitely do in lots of areas, then it feels amazing.
I want to know, what are you doing with all of these friendship bracelets that you're getting yeah. on these shows?
I feel like Taylor Swift.
Yeah. Are you reading each of them? Do you get the references? Are you keeping them? Like,
I read them and I get the references, and I wanted to keep them all like on the US leg of the tour,
yes,
and kind of build them up. And then I can't even say it out loud. I lost like half of them.
What do you mean you lost
venue.
Half of them?
Well, I put them in a special safekeeping bag, so that
it
I was thinking.
It doesn't sound very safekeeping to me.
It wasn't.
Now.
It wasn't. I was like, at the end of the European, at the end of the each leg of the tour, I can take a photo either of them in a big pile or on my arm or
yes.
something, and then I didn't. I lost that bag. And halfway through, and so I had to start again, and it was kind of demoralizing. And then I swore I would never say that out loud so that people wouldn't know I lost their bracelets that they so lovingly made, but I did, I'm sorry. But I kept as many as I could, and I, you know, I love it when I, you know, it's like Christmas every show, because I do sort of meet and, it's like a meet and greet before, or
yep.
People are sort of waiting out in the snow afterwards to say hello, which is so lovely. And it's Christmas every time, because people always bring these lovely thoughtful gifts that they've made, or art that they've made, or you know, t-shirts of things they know that I like.
Yeah.
And it's just like it makes you feel pretty lucky.
I can imagine. One person that is a longtime friend of Hits One is James Valentine from Maroon 5.
Oh,
what was it like working with him as a musical project? Like, to be able to pick his brain with certain things would have been amazing.
Well, we actually met in the gym. He came up to me and I think he'd seen me in Westworld, and he'd seen some covers that I'd been doing with a band, and he asked what I was, just literally waltzed up to me and asked what I was doing musically, and I just thought that was so cool. And now that I know,
but also, what are the chances that like that would be like, this isn't a networking event, yeah, or whatever, you didn't DM each other on Instagram and at a gym?
I always find the networking stuff kind of icky, and I don't do a lot of it, and I don't go to the places where it would happen organically, really. So for him to just come up to me and just kind of say hi felt like this moment of kismet. And then he wandered off, and I thought, what are you doing? You're trying to make music, run after this man.
Yeah, come back.
So I did. I ran after him. Like a creepy parking lot stalker, and I said, listen, I know this is probably a bit cheeky, but I am writing songs at the moment. He said, I don't suppose there's any chance you'd want to do like a session, write something together. And he was like, yeah, why not? I mean, he loves his life, loves playing guitar, loves making music. And I think, you know, when you're in a band like that, you're touring all the time, these crazy beautiful like venues, and have these wild experiences. But also, like, the most popular bands in the world, they're playing a lot of the same catalog.
Yep.
And I think it's just like somebody saying, could you help me with something new? It was something that he could respond to in a positive kind of way. And I feel very privileged that he made some time, and he brought along Sam Farrar, who's the bass player in Maroon 5, and mm-hmm. Sam actually ended up producing my whole album.
That's cool.
Because he's like very into all that stuff, and he's very, very skilled, and he has great ideas. I just got on with them so much, and it really had a really family vibe to it, you know. And we did all the post stuff in Sam's like studio in his back, you know, in the back of his house, and we played all the songs are like live, essentially, from the band. They're just like single or cut together takes of a band playing in a room in Santa Monica in a studio together on an old 70s kind of desk. And I just really wanted that. I wanted that adventure for myself. I wanted that experience for myself, and to have musicians like that are that crazy talented.
Yeah.
And a lot of the people who are on tour with me as well played on the album. They're all like kind of solo artists in their own right, pretty much, as well, which is like one of the real benefits of being an actor first, is that I think other solo artists feel like, oh, I can go and play with him, because I've been calling the tour that I'm on the mini Festival of Joy, because I wanted everyone in the band to open.
Yes, they play some of their own stuff. And
so that by the time the real benefit for them is that they get to share their music with all these new people. But the benefit for me is that by the time I walk on, they feel like this band, they're people that they're friends. They're people that they know already, and they are invested in them, and they're invested in us as a group. And I, you know, that's a huge part of like the kind of ethos of why I do creative things with my life.
Awesome. Ben Barnes, you're my plus one this morning. How are you enjoying your plus one experience so far?
I love when you call me your plus one. It makes me feel like I've been invited to something special.
Isn't this great?
And you say it so many times in a row that it makes me feel like I kind of got this little sort of smile on my face, which is, oh, we're going to a party.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, there's not really much going on in the studio. I mean, in the other studio, there is a disco ball.
Yeah, but like I said, I've been making movies for 20 years, and I've been making music only for like 4 or 5, so this is all like fun and exciting.
It's still a novelty to be in a radio studio.
Well, to be in a radio studio talking about music, talking about stuff that I've made on my own in some like lonely room,
yeah,
and then like suddenly you're singing it to like 2,000 people, and
people
are singing the words back at you, and it's an incredibly rewarding experience. I don't know how else to put it. It's just like you always hear people talk about how affecting that can be, but it really makes you feel like you've done something. And there's mm-hmm. something about being an actor where you're kind of shielded and you've been costumed by someone. Your lines have been written for you. You're edited. You don't have a huge amount of control over what you're doing. And I love it. And I love storytelling. And I love being an actor so much. And it is my career. But there is nothing that I've really done in that space that has been as fulfilling in terms of a reception as writing a song about something that has happened to you or something, a way that you feel about something, and then seeing that reflected in people's faces looking up at you on a stage, thinking they have had their own experience about this song. It's about something else. It's about someone else. It's about a different set of thoughts, but it's connected in some way. And that feeling is really extraordinary. And I'm actually, it took me a really long time to watch anything I was in and feel proud.
Mm-hmm.
But with music, it's been much quicker because I'm doing things that scare me. And to see those kind of reactions it makes me feel really proud of trying.
Now, this is what I need to process now, because how can someone who loves performing that much dislike karaoke so much as you do?
How do you know I don't like karaoke?
I did my research.
You really did. You're really good at this.
And
by the way,
how do you not like karaoke?
There's a thing, any performer I think will understand, there's a difference between like singing to a kind of anonymous crowd of thousands of people,
yep,
versus like if you had to like sing a song at Christmas just for your family sitting on the sofa looking at you, which is like horrifying to me.
Yeah.
The idea of that feels like you lost a bet, right? And it's karaoke to me is supposed to be terrible. And I think I have this experience of like being at karaoke, wishing I was somewhere else. The sound system is terrible. The song choices are poor.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody is standing up there screaming and wailing at you in this horrible way. And then the next person who stands up is like kind of a good singer.
Yep.
And then they're trying to sing really well, and that's even worse.
Well, that's the question that I always think with people that can sing very good like you. And then if it's like, let's all go to karaoke, like, then do you now have an expectation that you have to try and sing badly?
Yeah, everyone's drunk, but what are you supposed to try and sing like less well on purpose? I guess if it's like a duet, it's like a less cringy, but there's something deeply cringy about karaoke to me. It's usually the rooms and the environment and the sound systems and the lighting.
They don't set themselves up for success, the old karaoke bar.
Is this going to be terrible or is this going to be surprisingly good? But if it is, the performing element is going to definitely be too much. And I just don't know where to pitch it. And I don't like not feeling like I know how to be. Whereas when it's my show, I can be however I want.
That's exactly right. And you can be very effing good at it as well.
Thank you, mate.
Whereas with karaoke, I feel like that
if you're not, they want a refund. So
yes.
Yeah, I know what's expected of me.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Plus, I've never been into a karaoke bar not drunk ever. So
okay, I'm the sober guy, so I have to go into everything sober. So I might as well put on a performance.
Do you go to karaoke bars sober?
I couldn't tell you the last time I've been to a karaoke bar.
Me neither.
I will say that the only thing that does appeal to me is the idea of like a live band karaoke where the band's actually playing.
Oh, yeah, that's
because
awesome.
Because then I'm leaving my best Ben Barnes lifestyle. I'm a rock star on stage, right? Whereas when it's a CD bar.
Well, I'm doing the same thing, I handpicked the band. But apart from that,
that's exactly right. Growing up, the fact that your mum released a book, A Woman's Guide to Loving Sex, when you were at an all-boys school at 14.
You really did do your
research, nothing,
didn't
you? This sounds like nothing worse. Did she have to sit down and be like, honey, I just need to let you know, or was she oblivious to the fact that this could be great banter for the kids at school?
There was an accompanying video.
Oh, no, Ben.
Yeah.
No.
It was literally like lovemaking scenes that were then immediately cut to a talking head of my mum talking about what we've why it was just...
Oh, no.
And to be fair, listen, this is the most extraordinary woman who understands people and emotions and has been helping people with very difficult things for a very, very long time. And she is just extraordinary, and I love her more than anything in the planet. But it was just mistimed. I was 14, and it was just like the perfect fodder for like people to kind of mock you. And you know, I mean, obviously I was kind of like a bit of the bullied kid anyway, so it was like not particularly helpful.
But when you're 14, you're like, everyone's looking for something to be like, hey, Jimmy's got this.
And yeah, but
like,
you know what, when I was like 20, so you know, you're on a date and you're like, yeah, well, my mum's a sex and relationships therapist. Really?
Oh!
Do you know what I mean? There was a flip side eventually.
Okay. Panned out in the end.
There was a flip side eventually.
I would rather the benefit when I'm on a date when I'm in my 20s than like being king of the castle when I'm 14.
Nothing good happens to 14.
No one cares about the actual king of the castle when they're 14.
Exactly.
You're obsessed.
I'm so happy I'm not 14 anymore.
I know, especially now.
That
can you imagine
bad.
Now?
Oof.
Nothing worse. Social media. The book and the accompanying video would be following you on Instagram and TikTok nonstop.
Yeah.
That would be not good.
You're so right.
Your obsession with The Traitors, does that extend to the American version or is it exclusively UK?
Somebody asked me that a few weeks ago and I since watched some of the American one. It's not quite the same.
Okay.
But I do appreciate it. I love a board game night, and I love like a sort of like role play situation. And so, yeah, that show kind of, it just appeals to me. It's just fun.
Would you ever compete? Because obviously UK version is all normies, but US, it's like, hey, these are people of varying.
I think they're doing a UK.
Oh, here we go.
A UK traitors. Like, I love that. I'm like, I think they might be, maybe. I don't know if they are.
I haven't been getting my agent to beg nonstop.
I haven't gone that far. I think I'd probably be bad at it because I would be too excitable about it. I also watch the SAS celebrity, SAS.
Yeah, where they're hanging off.
You're hanging off the thing, and you're like, yeah, I could do that. And then if they actually asked, I'd be like, no,
I don't need to put myself through it. Because those guys, the ants of the world or whatever, yelling like, you can do this, you've been through everything. And I'm just thinking, I would be just like, no, I'm fine. I'm just going to go home and take a nap now. Like, I don't respond to that.
Maybe so, I could do the bit. I need to be the SAS guy who does the psychological evaluation, though, like, because with my therapist, psychiatrist parents, I could be the guy like, tell me about your childhood. How'd you get on with your father?
How did that impact?
I need to be
you?
That guy.
Yes, here we go.
And then nod to the door, bag over the head, they're taken out.
Get out of here.
And I'm still sat there looking, shaved head, dressed in black, giving the vibes.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I should be the instructor, even though I wasn't technically in the SAS, technically.
No, but you've been around your parents for long enough.
I've played Marines in shows. That should count.
I agree.
That should count.
You've done enough training.
Yeah.
Speaking of acting, can I ask, when you're auditioning like up to 10 times for Across the Universe, once this...
Woof. You are, without a shadow of a doubt, like the best prepared interview I've ever sat across from.
I wanted to do my research because I read interviews with you and I have questions that I can't ask until now we're in this part.
I love it. I deeply appreciate it.
But once it gets to the 10th audition, what on earth are they doing? Surely they know by now.
I think I was very young and they were looking for someone kind of a bit unknown, which kind of doesn't really happen anymore.
Yes.
But, it was a Beatles, the real kind of star of that movie was the Beatles catalogue. Mm-hmm. That was the IP. So, and they had Evan Rachel Wood as cast already as the girl who'd been in 13, and she was kind of established already. And so they were looking for kind of a British unknown for this thing. And there was down to two or three of us, and we were flown across to New York for the last round. And the difference was the director was there right in front of you, 6 feet away in the room. And honestly, I know what happened, which is I caved to the experience that we just talked about, which was like when it was in the UK and I was just like singing in a big room and there's loads of people behind a table. Well, that was one thing.
Yeah.
But when it was just one director sitting behind a table, it felt like singing for your mum at Christmas.
Yeah.
And I didn't know where to put my hands. I just kind of crumbled a bit. And that is still the one which stung the most.
Yeah.
Like, if I could just go back to that moment and never regret anything that happened to you, because it's all brought us here and I'm so happy to be where I am. I'm the luckiest man on the planet. But if I could go back to the moment, I'm sure I could need to summon just a different kind of confidence and do it a bit differently. Probably still wouldn't have got it, but I'd feel better about how I walked out the room.
Ben Barnes is my plus one. Where the Light Gets In is the album. The music video for 1 Minute More just came out.
This weekend, Super Bowl, when Harry Met Sally is one of your favourite movies.
Yes.
Are you excited for the reunited Super Bowl commercial?
Yeah, I saw a little clip of it online the other day. Is there someone with Sydney Sweeney in it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I mean, look, I have an original poster from when that movie came out in the cinema in my house, and I would love to be in a film that beautifully written at some point in your life about something so specific, and I love it. Who's the musical guest this year?
Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, cool.
Is doing the halftime show.
Yeah, won an arm, couple of armfuls of Grammys, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, it was just, can you imagine that life? Like, just going and rehearsing for the Super Bowl halftime show and just being like, hey, just need to go down
quick
the road.
Quick pause, I just gotta go grab.
Because not only am I going to win Song Grammys of the Year, I'm going to win Record of the Year as well. I'm going to win both and just take them back and then just do the
Super
Bowl.
Do you think that's what's missing in my music? I'm not.
Are you looking for a feud?
I don't have enough beef.
Who do you want to feud with?
I don't know. I want it to be playful and nice, though.
I don't think it's playful
Pillow
and nice.
Pillow fight feud. Do you know what I mean? Like that vibe.
Yeah, I don't think it's playful and nice between Drake and Kendrick.
No, it isn't. But no, there are people out there who want a pillow fight.
Yep, let's do it.
Okay, great.
Okay, so by the time that you are my plus one again, Ben Barnes,
I will have started a pillow feud with somebody. Yes. And by the way, I think I've just like invented something. Like the soft feud.
Yeah.
The gentle, loving fight.
We can do this.
Yeah, that's what we need more of that.
We're going to leave you with a hook on which celebrity Ben has decided to feud with. And when he is back as my plus one again, we will reveal
we'll reveal the answer.
Congrats on the album. Congrats on the tour.
Meg Ryan. Just
yeah, that's right. No, you would say
faking orgasm. Smack him with a pillow.
Okay, now we've gone down a different road.
We've
got
a completely different way.
A different idea to what I was expecting. Congrats on the album. Congrats on the tour. And congrats on all the success. Please come back. This has been a treat.
Thank you so much for having me.